Welcome back, everyone.
Powered by
Episode
Riverside
10
Media.
of the Gridiron Pulse. We have hit double digits and we haven't quit yet. How you doing today, Carter?
Pretty good, man. A little off topic. The second GTA trailer came out today, so I'm very excited. In a very happy
Nice.
mood today.
Nice. Love that. And they said it wasn't going to be till what, May of next year?
Yeah, they delayed it because it was supposed to come out, I think.
Sometime this summer.
Yeah, it was supposed to be this summer, and then it got delayed like a whole year. So I don't know. I'll see. I still don't believe that game's coming out. So I'll see come May next year.
Yeah, for real. See it whenever it hits the stores. All right, so we're obviously without Cole again this week, but he will be back for our regularly scheduled programming on Thursday. We're going to kick this one off talking about a huge commitment for the Georgia Bulldogs yesterday. Five-star, number one quarterback in the nation, Jared Curtis, commits to Georgia over Oregon. Can't really put into words how big this one is. This is our highest-ranked quarterback since Justin Fields, I believe. We don't really have to revisit how that one went, but we can say that this one can be a lot different. So we got Jared Curtis yesterday, and then reports are that he's signing about a two-year, $2 million deal because this is what we have to do nowadays with college athletes. Sounds like it's a pretty backloaded contract, like $600K to $800K in the first year and $1.2 to $1.4 in the next year. Honestly, it's a lot less than I would have thought it would be. Not breaking the bank, at least in those first 2 years, which is nice. Allows us to go after some more high caliber offensive linemen and receivers to protect him and so that he can throw too. I'm just going to kind of give this one off to you. What are your thoughts and everything about the Curtis commitment?
Absolutely massive. One of Kirby's biggest recruiting signings since he's been here. Obviously, the rival to this one would be the Justin Fields one. This is going to be, I hate to put a little damper on this news, but, I mean, just in today's college football, I mean, I guess you could say loyalty isn't really a thing anymore. Because, I mean, you see all these big-time recruitments. They commit to a school, and then, you know, 2-3 years later, they decommit. But I don't really think that'll be the case with Curtis. I think he's going to wait his time out and then obviously start battling for the starting QB job. I hope and pray that this doesn't end in another Jake Fromm and Justin Fields debate. But to be honest with you, I really don't see it happening. So I'll stop with the bad news there. But just a absolutely insane recruiting signing. Us two thought that he was going to go to Oregon. Pretty much almost like half of the country thought he was going to go to Oregon. But, I watched his signing video, and he said a big part of his signing was the relationships that he had with the coaches at Georgia, specifically Mike Bobo, which, if you don't know me, I am one of the people who is not particularly fond of Mike Bobo and his play calling, but damn, does that man know how to recruit. Again, this is just a huge, I mean, I can't stress it enough, a huge commitment to Georgia, to help booster the quarterback room next year. And, and it's funny reading all these comments from, Tennessee fans, Alabama fans saying that Georgia can never develop quarterbacks and that, the kid made the wrong choice. I really just want Jared Curtis to, just to shut up all the haters about how Georgia can't develop quarterbacks. I believe he can. I believe he is one of the best prospects that he's one of the best quarterback prospects that we are going to see for a while, I think. I can't stress enough how huge this signing is. And it really makes the 2026 class go off with a bang.
Absolutely, I agree with you on that. The last time Bobo himself had a five-star quarterback was actually Matthew Stafford, way back when. And actually just saw a report of a tweet or something like that. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't sign for more than $40 million this year with the Steelers or whomever it may be, Matthew Stafford is going to be the highest paid player in the history of the NFL. And he currently is, like right now. It's like 700 something million dollars in just contracts, which is
That's crazy.
unbelievable. But if we can somehow do the same thing with Curtis as what we did with Matthew Stafford back in the day, with obviously a much more talented roster around him, seemingly national championship or bust. I know. It seems like it's going to be. This kind of puts someone like Ryan Puglisi in a tough spot. He might end up being the odd man out because Curtis is still in high school for this upcoming season. So we're going to have Gunner starting this year, obviously. I don't know if I'm in the minority in this, but I definitely think that Gunner is going to come back for a second year of starting afterwards. He has plenty of eligibility. And honestly, if he wants to be a pro prospect and NFL quarterback, they like to see more than one season of total starts. Like being able to see you progress and stack up and have some longevity within a program is big for them. So I think it's going to be 2 years of Gunner. And then I don't want to say hopefully, but it seems like Pug would hit the portal in this situation. And then Curtis would come in starting his true sophomore year. Maybe his redshirt freshman year. He could probably redshirt his first year. So that would kind of tee it up for him to have a pretty long, hopefully quite illustrious career at Georgia. He said he wants to win the Heisman and be the number one overall pick and win a national championship. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, that fired me up when I heard him talk about that. But like you said, unfortunately I think this means that Puglisi I think is gonna enter the portal either. Probably, I would assume probably next year if he doesn't win the starting job this year, which, if you ask me, I think it's Gunner's to lose. I mean, he obviously has the playing time. He played in big games last year when Beck was hurt in the second half of the SEC championship and then against Notre Dame. So unfortunately, as talented as I think Puglisi could be with us, I think again it's Gunners to lose, and then now with Curtis coming in next year, I think pretty much the signs are pretty much written for him to go to the transfer portal, which I don't blame him at all, so.
No, you can't. I mean, he's been great for what he's done for us at Georgia. I mean, always providing a great look and scout team. Kirby obviously raves about him. Great kid, loves the G, all that good stuff. I would have to assume if Gunner would announce that he's coming back, probably in the December portal timing of this upcoming season, then that's when he would probably enter his name in the portal, I would have to imagine. Maybe he gives it another spring practice to go about, and then he's a next year spring transfer. But regardless, it seems like that's the way it's gonna go, at least with how the Jared Curtis contract and all that stuff is laying out right now. They're saying that Curtis might be making the most money out of the entire quarterback room the second he steps on campus, which is just wild to think about, but very true. Anyways, we can kind of go on to some events that are coming up this weekend. We are hosting five-star offensive tackle Jackson Cantwell to a visit. And in Curtis's kind of post-commitment interview that I saw, he just kind of dropped a bomb on everyone that he will be in Athens this upcoming weekend to help Jackson Cantwell make a right decision. So he's set to commit next Tuesday, I believe, so about a week from now. And having Curtis in Athens is definitely gonna help sway his decision to what we think is already a pretty heavy Georgia lean.
Especially now, like what you said with Curtis committing, I think he's gonna try his absolute hardest to get Cantwell to commit with us. Even though if you'd asked me probably about a week ago, I think even with Jared Curtis not if or here if you would have told me that Jared Curtis would go to Oregon, I think. I think even then, I still think Cantwell would have committed to Georgia, but now I think, especially now with Curtis committing to Georgia, I think I'm not going to put it out there that it's pretty much a done deal, but I would be very surprised if he committed somewhere else. But
Yeah, I agree with you
yeah.
on that. I think Curtis taking that kind of, I guess, a little bit of a discounted contract kind of helps us sign more illustrious recruits and five stars like Jackson Cantwell himself. Another couple little targets that we're looking at. Any wide receiver targets that you know of for the next upcoming? I know I have one in front of me. It would be Ryan Mosley from Carrollton as well. That would be kind of a nice one to have. And then we have the tight ends, obviously, Kaden Prothero and Mark Bowman would be either one, if not both, would be pretty insane signings for us. I mean, Todd Hartley has kind of cemented himself as probably a top five, if not top three, recruiter of the position in college football. I think we definitely get at least one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm looking at for Ryan Mosley. I'm looking at his 24/7 right now, and he's crystal balled to South Carolina right now. But I think again, the Jared Curtis signing is massive with all these new recruits that haven't committed yet. So I think, with Jared Curtis signing with Georgia, and obviously he comes with just massive potential. I think it could sway a bunch of these guys to come to Georgia, especially Mosley. I think, especially him being a local kid, I think he could definitely be, I guess you could say, swayed to come to Georgia rather than South Carolina, which is where he's currently crystal balled by 24/7. But we'll see. Obviously, the tight ends would be massive. I have all the confidence in the world with Todd Hartley to get those guys to come here.
I know it's kind of insane to say, but even if we don't get either of those tight ends, he's going to be throwing to solely five-star tight ends. Like that's all that we have on the roster, especially come time when he's there. The only ones that aren't five stars, I believe, are going to be our two starters, oddly enough, Lawson Lucky and Oscar Dell. They're both highly rated four stars. They both have differentiating skill sets that they both do different things well, and they're a pretty good duo, I would say. Yeah, I brought up Ryan Mosley because James Coley made a comment on Twitter. It was like "Go Dogs" or something that had to do with the Jared Curtis signing, and Ryan Mosley was the top comment under it. He put the eyeball emojis.
Such a
Like, yep,
tease, man.
come on
Such a
down,
tease.
brother. You already know. Bring him to me.
Such a tease, man. Dude, recruits do that all the time, and it's the biggest it's the most misleading emoji ever when it comes to like free agency and like pro sports and then recruiting and college sports. So
I know I
it's the
saw a bunch
biggest.
of stuff from Cantwell yesterday too, as soon as Jared Curtis signed. And he was one of them. Cantwell was one of the people that Curtis told before he actually committed. He said that he was talking to Jackson earlier in the day yesterday, and he seemed pretty pumped about it. So it'll be good to have them both on campus together this weekend, meeting in person for the first time. Hopefully there's a great relationship there and it just keeps getting better.
Come on down, brother. Come on down.
Come on down, brother. All right, we got next on this list here. We're gonna transition. AJ Smith Shaver tosses a no-hitter through seven. Was he through eight?
No, it was 7 1/3, I think. He gave up
Yeah.
the hit with 0 outs in the
Yep.
eighth.
And then, I mean, they left him in through the eighth inning, gave us eight innings of one hit ball, won 4-0. That was kind of a crazy game in terms of just like kind of random things happening. If you want to kind of take this one, talk about the Mattelson inside the park home run, which was kind of unfortunate for Reds fans.
Yeah, I have a little mini rant about this because I just see just morons on Twitter trying to complain that oh like Matt Olson ran it out like and dude's writhing in pain in left field what do you expect Matt Olson to do, like just stop running and go into the outfield and console him? No, like you finish out the play, And then you go over and console. It's like it's the same thing that I see people complain about in football, where let's just say like a corner gets hurt on the other side of the field covering a receiver, and then the receiver on the other side catches the ball and then goes for a touchdown. People always love and complain that, oh, like the game, like the play should have been stopped. No, like no, like what do you expect any of these guys to do? And then I just see these idiots that are like, oh, like the Reds should throw at Matt Olson for running that out. It's like, no, like you people are just find anything to complain about. But you know, I personally want to say a prayers up to Tyler Callahan. You know, I think that was what his fourth game. He's a
Yeah.
rookie, and so I hope everything's all good with him, and that he is really good, successful surgery and comes back strong. But yeah, I was watching that game live, and I thought he caught the ball, and
It looked like he did.
the umpires ruled it not a catch. To me, that looked like a catch just because like he dropped his glove obviously when he broke his wrist. So I think it was a catch, but you know, that's besides the point. Just a complete freak accident, you know, kid's just trying his hardest to make a play. He made an outstanding play catching that ball, and unfortunately caught the bad look of it with breaking his wrist, which I don't know if our viewers have seen that picture. It is gruesome. It is
Don't look it up.
gruesome.
Don't look it up.
It's pretty bad, but you know, just hope Tyler Callahan has really good, successful surgery, comes back stronger than ever. I mean, you just absolutely hate to see that for the kid. His fourth game as a rookie, just absolutely brutal break. But AJ Smith-Shawver, man, I'm one of those people who's been overly critical of AJ Smith-Shawver. I think he has all the talent in the world. The kid is amazing as a pitcher. Just you know, just his biggest issue is commanding his fastball. So I think like yesterday he commanded his fastball really well, and he was really dominant. And you know, I've been listening to all these former pitchers talk about, you know, pitchers today, and if you can't command a fastball, you're just asking to get lit up. So I think you know, Rick Kranitz was working with Smith-Shawver on commanding his fastball, and it was outstanding last night. You know, obviously taking a no-hitter into the eighth inning, unfortunately gave it up with zero outs in the eighth inning. You know, I wish he would have gotten the complete game shutout, but I get why Snit took him out, because he didn't want his arm to be dead from, I think he exited with almost 100 pitches, which I would imagine that's probably his career high in pitches. But you know, again, just amazing stuff from AJ Smith-Shawver last night. It's so funny, me and Jacob were talking about it. It's always like it's the most like unexpected pitchers for the for the Braves that'll you know, have a no-hitter going into later the games or whatever. Like I remember Mike Foltynewicz had a no-hitter going had a no-hitter with like two outs in the bottom of the ninth, and sure enough, ironically, it was Matt Olson who broke it up on a homer because we were playing Oakland. You know, Sean Newcomb had a no-hitter going to, I think it was bottom of the ninth, two outs, and then Chris Taylor hit a single to break it up, which still hate Chris Taylor to this day for doing that. But you know, it's so weird. Like it's always like the pitchers like you just wouldn't expect at all. Like I'm not gonna put it out in the universe, but do not be surprised if down the road somehow, some way, Bryce Elder is still on this
I was
team
just about to say.
and he's thrown a no-hitter into the eighth inning. I swear it's not Chris Sale, it's not Schwellenbach, it's not Strider. It's guys like, you know, Renato Lopez or Hey Chase. I'm not throwing shade at Renato because he had a great year last year, but you know, Smith-Shawver, Bryce Elder. I mean, hell, it could be Jesse Chavez for all I care. But I'm also so convinced that the Braves will never get a no-hitter as long as I'm a fan of this team. I think still the last time the Braves have gotten a no-hitter was in like 1994 or something. It's been forever. But again, great, just outstanding pitching performance by AJ Smith-Shawver. I think this is a really good that was a really good confidence game for him, because I think usually when he's having a few bad starts, his confidence seems to dip a lot. I think this was a really good, I guess you could say, tune-up game, confidence game. His stuff was on point last night. I couldn't ask for better pitching performance from one of your young arms.
Absolutely. I mean, I know he still carries that rookie designation from last year because he only started like I think 4 or 5 games last year. And he's like what, 22 or 23 years old? It's insane. But yeah, what a great little kind of kickstart to your career to have a long no-hitter that just kind of ended. I mean, it's not like he gave up a home run or anything like that. And we had a 4-0 lead at that time, so it's not like he was in jeopardy of still losing the game. He was very comfortable, and he had just reached his pitch count. It seemed like got up close to 100, and then we got the last Braves no-hitter was April 8th, 1994. We got that right on the head by Kent Mercer against the Los Angeles Dodgers.
As big of a Braves fan I am, I honestly don't know who he is.
Neither do I, which goes back to our previous point. It's always the random guys. For what reason? I have no idea. But since 1994, it seems like that's going to be a continuing theme here. So you're actually going to the game tonight. What are you expecting to see? What are you hoping to see? Hoping to see some bats come alive, maybe. Maybe some fireworks, couple good runs.
Yeah, like I'm pulling out the pitching matchup tonight. Andrew Abbott for the Reds is going tonight. He's 2-0 and almost a sub-3 ERA with a 1.26 WHIP. I'm not sure. I don't have the exact stats pulled up for the Braves team versus lefties, but I would think that the Braves probably do. I would assume probably a little bit well against lefties than righties, because you got Ozzie who bats really really good from the right. You got Riley, you got Ozuna, you got Eli White who's swinging a hot bat. And then you got Sean Murphy who's swinging a good bat too. A very I would say it's more righty lineup, because I mean with Ozzie being able to switch hit,
Ozzie might
which
actually do something tonight. I mean, good Lord.
I mean he had I think he had one or two hits last night, I think. And then he went 2 for 3 or 2 for 4 against the Dodgers on Sunday, which Bryce Elder, I'm very sorry for trash talking you. You may have heard me trash talking you, and I appreciate you, sir, for dominating the Dodgers. So want to give a quick shout out to Bryce Elder when needed. But Andrew Abbott tonight, Andrew Abbott versus Chris Sale. Chris Sale coming off a good pitching performance against the Rockies. Unfortunately, the Braves offense didn't help him. But I'm expecting more of a game like Sale had in Colorado. I just think the Reds offense is pretty bad.
Seems like it.
It's pretty bad. You still got guys like Spencer Steer, who I still think is pretty good. Obviously, Ellie De La Cruz, monster when he's putting bat to baseball, not striking out. Got Jake Fraley. The Reds have a lot of decent guys. They're just struggling, like how the Braves were the first, I guess you could say, first 10 games of the year. Just the entire lineup was cold, but I'm expecting the Braves to win this one. I wouldn't say pretty easily. I think they could win by 2 to 4 runs. I think it could be the same result as last night, which
Let me see a nice 6-2. Or 7-3. Let's get more than five. That would be nice.
I'm gonna
And then
say
the Reds' record isn't that bad. They're 18-18 as opposed to ours being 16-18. So I know they got some notable players on their team. They've just been kind of in a skid lately.
yeah, and I don't, their bullpen really hasn't helped them either. They just, I think they, I don't know if they DFA'd or they sent down Edwin Diaz's brother, Alexis Diaz. You know, he's been one of the more underrated closers in baseball, but this year he's been really struggling. But if I had to give a score prediction tonight, I would probably say, I'm gonna say Braves 6, Reds 2.
I like that one.
Think that's what's going to be the score tonight.
I
So
like that one.
if you
All right, let's
are
go ahead and transition over to some NBA games that we had last night. Two crazy games. Those were both great games. Watch the whole Knicks versus Celtics and our Hitler versus Stalin matchup of the night. That was what a terrible game. I hate both of these teams from the bottom of my heart. Knicks pulled it out 108-105 in overtime off of a terrible inbounds play by Joe Mazzulla trying to chuck it cross court over to Jaylen Brown. Mikal Bridges just swiped it away from him. It was kind of a crazy defensive play, but just a bad play call in general out of a timeout, too. The Boston Celtics, I got some stats for you because this was bad. They shot
Oof.
60 threes. They were 15 for 60 from the 3-point line, 25%. And the Knicks were 17 of 37 with 45.9%. I mean, that's just in and of itself, that is wild. Celtics shot 35% from the field. Tatum and Brown both had 23, both played terribly. I've been a big hater of Jason Tatum for a while now, but kind of offsetting that, I've been a big fan of Jaylen Brown and what he does, but he didn't help me out at all last night. And then on the other side for the Knicks, you had OG Anunoby and Jalen Brunson both had 29 on much higher field goal percentages. OG went 6 for 11 from 3. Jalen Brunson went 5 for 9. I mean, just an overall pretty solid game. The Knicks were down by 20 early on in the game and then just proceeded to keep clawing back. And then they eventually took it in overtime, which I didn't think was going to happen either. I was like, usually the better overall team wins in overtime. So you'd think that would be the Celtics. But they just kept on struggling. They struggled all throughout the second half and then kept struggling through overtime. And the Knicks were able to claw one back and take it. On the road, too.
Yeah, definitely in hostile environment like TD Garden. I was very surprised that the Knicks stole this game from the Celtics. You know, like you said, the Knicks were down 20. I think it was it the second half or first half that they're down by 20?
We're definitely in the start. So,
Maybe
yeah, they're
second.
down 20 in the third quarter and then early on in the third
Wow.
quarter and just came back. Yeah.
Yeah,
Held the
I.
Celtics to 16 points in the fourth.
Whew, man, that's a brutal loss if you're a Celtics fan.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna go again. I'm gonna go on a little mini rant here. 63 point attempts in a game is just absolutely atrocious.
Insane.
I am more of a college basketball fan than NBA, and a team shooting 60 threes in a game is exactly what is wrong in modern day NBA. Nobody wants to watch these dudes just shot chuck random threes, just praying it goes in. I don't like how the NBA players play the games. You know, no defense at all, and all these dudes do is just shot chuck just random threes and just pray it goes in. The Celtics are the absolute worst with this. They shoot more threes than I've ever seen a team shoot threes. I mean, I don't blame them at all because they have great shooters, but you know, when they were off last night, as terrible as they were, I mean, shooting 25% from three, shooting 63 point attempts is honestly, if I was a Celtics fan, I'd be embarrassed. I mean, that is pathetic on so many levels. That's one of the main reasons why I like college basketball more because I just think it's more of like an actual team game, and it's not a bunch of ISO ball one-on-ones. But, you know, I had to go on a little mini rant there. But, you know, very, very entertaining game. Like you said, Jacob, I am not a fan of both the Knicks and the Celtics, two insufferable fan bases, especially on Twitter. Looking at you, Knicks. The Knicks are the worst on Twitter, but the Celtics are not much better. Two insufferable fan bases, two insufferable teams, you know, two insufferable sports cities. I wish nothing but the worst for both New York and Boston when it comes to sports. But you know, Boston has like eased up a little bit ever since, you know, the Patriots have fell off after Brady left. But you know, New York fans are just some of the worst sports fans ever, so I really hope that the Celtics beat them, because I really don't want to see another one of those stupid street videos after every time the Knicks win a series and their fans get so hyped and they start chanting whoever they want to play next, and then it ends up just going wrong in their face. Like they just did the exact same thing to Boston again that they do every year. And then of course you have these rent-free fans that are always like F Trae Young, like after just a random like regular season game, like that man
Wow.
owns prime real estate in Madison Square Garden and their fans. It's not even funny.
Trae Young lives rent-free in every single Knicks fan's head. It's wild to me. Like that was almost 5 years ago now. It was 4 years ago. That
Yeah,
was
it's
2021, right?
yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
It's
we've been way worse than them for pretty much the entire time, but we still seem to beat them on a pretty regular basis, which I feel like is very funny. We can go ahead and go on to this next game afterwards. I mean, another amazing game. We had an overtime game and then a game winner last night. Aaron Gordon hitting a fast break three for the win, 121 to 119 over OKC. Jokic played like the MVP against who's probably going
insane.
to win the MVP. Imagine being an MVP voter last night that you voted for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, he didn't play terrible. He had 33 and 10 and 8 assists. Not bad at all, but when you look at Jokic, walked into their house as a more than a 10-point underdog, had 42 and 22. It's just insane. We've talked about it before, you and I have, but the way he plays basketball is it's hilarious. I love it. I mean, it's so funny. He's just moseying along down the court, do do do, like behind the back over the head pass, chucking up a three from behind his head from the parking lot, and just cashes it. I mean, the Nuggets played, they were down 12 in the third quarter in this one. Another big comeback here for an underdog on the road, which is pretty wild. I know both teams last night that won were underdogs of 9.5 or more points. That's the first time that has happened the same day in the NBA playoffs since they've been tracking like the sports gambling and stuff like that. Jokic had 42, Aaron Gordon had 22 in the game winner, Jamal Murray had 21, Westbrook had a surprisingly good game with 18 points coming off the bench, and he had that game winning assist. I know I saw a tweet about it. It's like, I know the fast break layup was looking at Westbrook like the Green Goblin mask. You know how bad he just wanted to split the defenders and just try to dunk one home and bang it off the back rim or something, but he made the right play. Found Aaron Gordon, shooter in the corner. I can't believe that's a sentence to Aaron Gordon, the shooter. It's like, dude's known for his dunking and his dunk competition, but yeah, an overall great game by both teams. Denver was able to take it home on the back of Aaron Gordon and Jokic.
Yeah, amazing game. Amazing game. Two really good games. I've been honestly really surprised with the NBA playoffs. There's been so many great games. You know, I think last year's was a little bit of a stinker just because I think, well, especially the finals, just because the Celtics were very, or the Mavericks are very overmatched by Boston. But, you know, I mean, Jokic is just unbelievable. I mean, I really don't know Like it's just crazy to watch him play because if you would have took one look at him and be like, oh yeah, like that man has three MVPs, you would be called insane. I'm watching this dude just completely body Chet Holmgren in the paint with every single offensive or defensive rebound. I mean, he's grabbing everything. I mean, he had 22 rebounds and 42 points. That is just unheard of. That's video game numbers, man. That's 2K numbers. Russell Westbrook better thank Aaron Gordon for bailing him out because I don't know if you watched the end of the game. He had a wide open three to take the lead, and he just completely bricked it. And NBA Twitter, whenever Russ throws up some terrible shot in crunch time and misses, he's gonna get slandered to no man. But
West Brick.
no, I'll. Oh my God, it was so funny. But yeah, if I'm Russell Westbrook, I am. Thanking, I'm buying Aaron Gordon dinner for him bailing me out last night. He better thank Chet Holmgren too because he choked two free throws at the line with like 9 seconds left, and they would have gone to OT. But I mean, just a absolute steal of a game by Denver. Oklahoma City kept fouling Denver when they're up by three. I mean. In the time, in my opinion, I think it's the right call because you don't want something to happen like what happened last night, or with the Aaron Gordon three-point winner. I think it's a good strategy to foul up three. Obviously, you don't want them to have a chance at getting a three-pointer, but Chet Holmgren, man, you gotta knock those two down, dude. You blew that game single-handedly by choking those two free throws, because obviously Aaron Gordon hits a shot, we're going to OT. Yeah, like you said, Jacob, I would hate to be an MVP voter right now, because I mean, Jokic, crazy stat line, and Shai really didn't even play bad either. I mean, 33 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, almost triple double last night. Didn't really go to the line too much. He had 9 free throw attempts, which I don't know if you've been keeping up with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The huge knock on him is that he's a huge foul merchant, which
Yeah,
to me, I
for
think
his
he is.
standards, that's like a third of what he usually gets in a game.
Yeah, and he shot 12 of 26, which is, I mean, it's okay. It's okay. 2 of 6 from 3. Again, surprisingly, he was only minus 16 in plus minus, which. I'm just gonna flat out assume that's probably because of defense. I don't think Shai is really that good of a defender. And very interesting too. The whole Nuggets starting lineup besides Michael Porter was positive in the plus minus last night. Aaron Gordon plus 16, Jokic plus 10, Jamal Murray plus 12, Christian Brown plus 15. And then you got Michael Porter, who was minus 15, but he was 1 of 8 from the floor last night, which I can completely see why. And then Shai was minus 16, Lu Dort was minus 21, Isaiah Hartenstein was plus 2, Jalen Williams was minus 6, Chet Holmgren was minus 14. I think, I don't know, people really, I guess, overblown the plus minus in basketball. I don't really think it's a huge, I guess, a huge determining factor if you won a game or not. At least in my opinion. But I just thought it was really interesting to see that everyone besides one player in the Nuggets starting five had a positive plus minus. But again, just absolute steal of a game by Denver. I was really surprised that they actually won this game. I thought Oklahoma City had it in the bag at probably like midway in the fourth quarter, but if I'm Chet Holmgren today, I am just sick to my stomach,
Turn your
choking
phone
those.
off, buddy.
Don't go on Twitter, man. I've seen him getting slandered so bad on Twitter. It's not even funny. I if I were him, I'd be just sick to my stomach. I probably couldn't even sleep last night knowing that I just blew the game for my team.
Yeah, we're gonna keep it on the topic of Team stealing a game on the road. Pacers, tonight's game. They're up 1-0 on the Cavs on the road. So that all three underdogs in that have played that have at least played a game so far are up 1-0 on road teams. I watched a little bit of that Pacers Cavs game. That's if any team that I would like to see personally come out of the East, it's one of those two teams because I like them both more than the Knicks and the Celtics. But honestly, I don't really like either of those teams either. Like it's not a great playoffs for teams that I quote unquote enjoy watching or that I've liked for some point in time before in my past. I mean, it would be cool to see the Cavs do it without LeBron, which would be awesome. It would be nice to see Indiana finally be able to pull something out and go to an NBA Finals. That would be cool. I don't dislike Halliburton. I just think he's kind of, I don't know, he's kind of weird and fruity. But he goes on Pat McAfee all the time and he's funny and he's great. Walks around with a super hot blonde girlfriend. It's like, all right, bro, you do you. Whatever. He had a great game this past game. And then they're up 1-0 on the Cavs tonight. The Cavs are 8-point favorites at home. And the Cavs, I've always enjoyed watching Donovan Mitchell play. I think he's an absolute baller. I remember when he was in the NCAA tournament back at Louisville, I was like, this guy just can't miss. Like, this guy is an absolute baller. And then obviously followed him a little bit playing on the Jazz. And then now he's on the Cavs. I believe it sounds like they're going to be without one of, if not both, DeAndre Hunter and Evan Mobley. Was that who it was?
I think so.
I think so. And I know they were without Darius Garland for the first game.
DeAndre Hunter, he's listed questionable. Darius Garland is questionable, and Evan Mobley is questionable tonight. So the
Yeah, I
Cavs.
see right here. All three of them say game time decisions. So I feel like that has a lot to do with they're going to win or not. I mean, those are their second, third, and fourth best players, no matter what order that they're in. I don't think any of them are just better overall than Donovan Mitchell. But he had to do a lot in the first game just to keep it close. I mean, the Pacers kind of had a stranglehold on him for the entire game, it seemed like.
Obviously if the Cavs are going to be down those three players, they're going to be in deep trouble for game two, because I mean Darius Garland's a good shooter, DeAndre Hunter's really good when he gets hot, and then obviously Evan Mobley, who just won Defensive Player of the Year. That would be a massive loss if Cleveland doesn't have those three guys. But just looking at the stats from game one, I think it was on Sunday. Andrew Nembhard, man, he's been playing really well in these playoffs. I mean, he did amazing in the Bucks series with backing up Halliburton, who I think he's gonna get his own. He just needs Siakam to step up, Miles Turner to step up. And then Andrew Nembhard has been kind of like the unsung hero for them, as their shooting guard who. He had 23 points, was plus 21. He had 6 assists, was 5 of 6 from 3, and shot 7 of 10 from the floor. So that is amazing. You'll take that every day if you're Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah, highly efficient scorers. That's a recipe for success.
Donovan Mitchell, I mean, he had 33 points, but he did not shoot it particularly well at all. 13 of 30, 1 of 11 from 3 is pretty awful, but I'm really surprised that the Cavs only lost by 9. If you were to look at the box scores of who of like the scores of the players, you probably would imagine that Indiana probably blew them out, but they got a lot of help from Ty Jerome off the bench, DeAndre Hunter,
I remember them
but
talking about this during the game, and I'm looking at it right now. Pacers had 16 turnovers to the Cavs 7. That's gonna help out the score a lot. So, I mean, the Cavs were still in it for the majority of the game, even since they did shoot terribly. I mean, Donovan Mitchell was essentially shot chucking at the end of the game. 1 for 11 from 3. It's not gonna be a good recipe for success there. But I mean, if they're without both or all three of them, Mobley, Hunter, and Darius Garland, they're going to be in big danger of going down 0-2 at home, and then going two more in Indiana. It's not going to be, it's not an easy place to win either. That place is going to be absolutely rocking.
Coming into the series, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but
no, you're good.
Coming into the series, I don't know if I predicted it already, but I probably would have predicted Indiana just because I think Indiana is on a really hot streak, and I don't know. I don't really buy into the Cavs a lot. I think they remind me a lot of OKC from last year when they had a really good regular season and kind of just fell apart in the playoffs. I think Cleveland's going to be in that same situation too. I mean, hell, you could probably also say the same about OKC this year with blowing that lead last night. But I think the Cavs are probably more regular season team than playoff team. I just think Donovan Mitchell can only do so much to help his team. I mean, obviously when you have guys back healthy, but you know, with the injuries, like you said, I think it could potentially be a early exit for the Cavs in this series.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. That's a tough, I mean, three of your four best players being hurt is not an easy one to overcome. And let's just move on here to the game that's after that, 9:30 on TNT. It's our boy, Ant-Man, against the Warriors. The legend killer. Is he going to be able to do it again? He took down LeBron and Luka in the first round. Is he going to be able to take down Steph and Jimmy Buckets? It's going to be a great one to see. The Wolves are at home, 6.5-point favorites off the bat. They're going to need to take probably both of these games at home just to be in a comfortable spot. Because, I mean, if you're the road team, underdog, like that big first goal is take one on the road. If you can steal one on the road, that's usually, it kind of sets you up for success on that one. You're going to need a big game from Ant-Man. I know the Warriors are a relatively small team as well, so I could see Gobert having another great series here. And just like Naz Reid, the Wolves just seem to have a lot of big men. And then going to need DiVincenzo and Ant on the defensive end too, guarding Steph and Jimmy. I don't know if Ant's going to guard Jimmy. I think he's kind of a defensive liability, but he's just a super athlete. So, I mean, he's going to be able to stay in front of just about everyone and play the full 48 minutes, it seems like. That's what he's been doing thus far. I really, really hope Minnesota wins this series. And especially this game tonight, just start it off strong, blow them out, just win by 20 plus. Let's see it happen. That would be awesome.
Oh man, I am so excited to see this game. I think, well, unfortunately, I think I'll probably miss most of the games because I'll be at the Braves game tonight, but I'll be keeping up on my phone. But I'm actually glad that the Warriors beat the Rockets because I think this is a more entertaining series than the Timberwolves and the Rockets, because obviously Steph Curry, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, who will probably try and attempt to choke out Rudy Gobert at some point during the series.
Been known to do such things.
Him and his WWE moves in basketball. But, I think I predicted it last video, but give me the Wolves 6. I think it's going to be a very tight series early on. I think the Wolves are probably going to win at least one at home. I think they'll steal one at Golden State, and then they're going to win at Golden State in Game 6. So I think this is a really, really good matchup. I think the Timberwolves match up a lot better to the Warriors than they probably would have to the Rockets, because I think the Rockets are a lot taller team with Amin Thompson, Şengün, Jabari Smith. But I think, again, really favorable matchup by Minnesota. Like you said, they're a very tall team. You got Randall, you got Naz Reid, you got Gobert, and then you got some really tall wings that I think will help out, especially with their defense. I think it'll help them out a ton, you know, trying to guard Steph, trying to guard Jimmy Butler, you know, trying to limit Draymond, which, I mean, Draymond's not really a prolific scorer, but, you know, try and stop him too. But yeah, I am really looking forward to this series. Give me the Wolves in six. I think Ant-Man knocks off another legend in these playoffs.
I agree with you on that. I would like to take Wolves in six as well. If not six, then seven, I think. This could be a long one. I could see a lot of these series being good. I wouldn't be surprised if Denver OKC went to seven, New York Boston went to seven. I mean, I thought it looked like when the Celtics were up 20, I was like, oh, Celtics in four. Like, this is gonna be pretty easy. I think the Celtics were undefeated against the Knicks during the regular season. I could still see Boston's squeaking that one out in five or six, maybe, but they'd have to play a lot better than what they did last night. We can go ahead and get to our last topic of the day. This little Michigan. I don't even know what it is, dude. I have their schedule pulled up. There's
Joking.
a reason why it was games three and four. So Sharon Moore has a self-imposed suspension that he had put on himself for his involvement in the whole Connor Stallions debacle, whatever you want to call that. I think it's super lame, and I don't necessarily know if this is going to be the last that we hear of this. I wouldn't be surprised if the NCAA actually steps in and does give like a bowl ban of some kind or suspends him for more games than just Central Michigan at home and at Nebraska, weeks three and four. I mean, come on. I mean, they play Oklahoma at home the week before that. Actually, no, it's away. And then they have a bye week after Nebraska, and then they're going home versus Wisconsin. I mean, they have a pretty easy schedule, except for, I guess, Ohio State at the end. You can make an argument for Oklahoma. I don't know. I could. This whole situation is just super weird. I wouldn't be surprised if the NCAA steps in, like I said, but that would actually mean that they do something right, which the NCAA is not known for doing. They kind of suck in just about every aspect that they're expected to be good in. But I would love to hear your take on this.
I think, just to put it very bluntly, I think this is an absolute just joke. Well, it's no wonder that Sharon Moore wants to suspend himself against Central Michigan and Nebraska, two bum programs. Of course, it's only right that he picks those two. Suspend him for the Oklahoma game, man. Or hell, even suspend him for the USC game, because I think that's probably a trap game because you have to go all the way across the country. But no, of course, it has to be Central Michigan and Nebraska, two probably the least hardest games on their schedule. Like, just give me a damn break, dude. It's an embarrassing look for Michigan. It's an embarrassing look for Sharon Moore. And again, of course, it's self-imposed. It's not. Oh, like the university stepping in. It's like no. Like it's his own suspension. Like of course he's gonna pick the two bad games on his schedule. Like, come on now. Like Central Michigan, come on, bro. And then Nebraska, stop, bro. Like if the NCAA definitely needs to step in, but they probably couldn't care less about this situation. Because I think they probably. I would again. I'm just assuming that the NCAA would probably do things right, which they won't. But they would probably suspend him for more than two games. Again, the suspension is just absolute joke. That's really all I got to say about the situation. Absolute joke. Embarrassing for Michigan.
I could see maybe like the first four. They could step in and suspend him for the first four. New Mexico at Oklahoma, Central Michigan, and at Nebraska. I mean, still, it's light. They got a free national championship for advanced scouting. It's like, bro, you cheated.
This reminds me of that pathetic suspension that they gave Jim Harbaugh when they literally suspended him for like, what was it, like three, four, like terrible games. Like, cool, man. Like, why? Like, fine. Like, suspend somebody more. Like, suspend them during like their biggest games. Like, it just like it makes it does it does them no good to suspend them for Central Michigan and Nebraska. Like, it makes no sense at all. It's It's embarrassing for Michigan. It's embarrassing for their program. It's embarrassing for Sharon Moore. So that's really all I've
With all
got to
that being
say.
said, I could still see them losing at Nebraska.
That would be hilarious. Patrick
I don't think Michigan's going to
Mahomes
be any good this year. I mean, they weren't any good last year. They won a fluke game versus Ohio State. I could see him being 2-2 by the time his suspension's over, losing at Oklahoma and at Nebraska. But then you can rip off probably 6 or 7 pretty easy wins. I think the only thing that would have been more funny about the suspension, if he would have like cherry-picked games throughout, he's like, okay,
junior.
I'm gonna suspend myself for Central Michigan week 3, Purdue towards the end of the year, and then
Northwestern.
Northwestern right there. Yeah. And that would have been hilarious. I mean, that would have been actually funny and people would have like gotten a good
Glad.
laugh out of
Yeah.
it. But picking a 2-game little compartment
Man,
right there, that's just two teams that you should beat.
speaking of Michigan, man, I hope and pray that they beat Ohio State again. That would be the funniest thing ever. That would
Yeah.
be so funny. No, man, like we said about Nebraska, Patrick Mahomes Jr. gonna beat him. Man, I'm so
Patrick
bad.
Mahomes wannabe
Man,
lookalike. I was talking to one of my friends about that last night. That whole situation with Raiola is so weird. It's just weird and creepy.
it's
It just
cringe
gives me
is
like
what
a
it is.
weird feeling inside, like just be yourself. I don't know. It's
Shout
just
out Matt
weird.
Rule for taking him in and not letting him come to Georgia, because that would have been a embarrassing look for
I
Georgia.
know.
So keep cosplaying Patrick Mahomes, my guy. Oh yeah,
I
and
think that's a good note to end it on. Are you good?
yeah, he I was about to say, speaking of Dylan Raiola, he just got a NIL deal with Adidas, which is the same company that sponsors Patrick Mahomes. So
Yeah, Mahomes is
people.
not helping at all. He's like been out in public. He's like, yo, I'm cool with it. Like, that's my guy. I'm like,
Hey.
no, that's not what you're supposed to say. You're supposed to call this man out for being weird and creepy. Like,
Hey,
that's it.
next thing you know, his bro's gonna shave his head off like Patrick Mahomes
Give it a month. Give it until the
did.
start of the season. They're gonna look exactly the same.
So cringe, dude. Shout out Matt
That's
Rule,
weird. Shout out Matt Rule. Thanks, bud.
though.
All right, that's gonna do it for episode 10 of the Gridiron Pulse. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, repost us on social media anytime you see it. See ya.
See y'all.